Food security is the main theme of this show series, more specifically, the hungry, hurting, and the homeless. Food with Friends was our first show in this series about a unique outdoor food kitchen run by two rather remarkable ladies who were guests on that first show on January the 29th. And this morning, I'm very fortunate to have those two special ladies on the show again, just for a follow-up. And the second part of today's show is Greenhouse in the Snow. I think you're going to find that rather interesting. I have two guests for you, and I'll be talking to them in about 15 minutes. But first, an update on Food with Friends. Welcome, Chrissy and Monica.
Thanks, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
So I'm going to give you a quick little bio. Like, Chrissy Day works as a sound engineer here at CKVS, and she hosts or co-hosts A Joyful Noise and Love and War. I've heard both of them. Not bad, actually.
Well, not bad. And excellent.
Excellent. And she produces Grace for the Journey and Wordsmiths of the Shuswap. Now, Monica, I'm going to keep this short, but she's passionate about the spectrum of mental health. And she's a School District 83 Wellness Center coordinator, the coordinator, and Community Living BC parent facilitator. So I'm going to start with you, Chrissy, and then I'm going to jump to Monica. But I want you to give me a little snapshot of what Food with Friends is and why that name.
Well, we started out just on the tailgate of my truck, but we soon realized what we wanted to be. And we wanted not to be food service. We wanted to be friends breaking bread with friends. And we've accomplished that, I think, really nicely. So Food with Friends indicates that it's not food for friends, where we're in the power position and you're at the mercy of us. So we have built a friendship community, and I think it's working out really well. What do you think, Monica?
I think it's great. We have so many people from community of all walks of life joining us, bringing food. So it's like a potluck. Great quality food. It's really nutritionally based. We ask that people come and join us and break bread with us and have a meal, so that there is a mix of people. There's no stigma, because we are all the same. And it's really making a difference in some of the barriers that the homeless and the vulnerable are feeling. We know we're helping even with their budgets by giving them a really good, nutritious meal four times a week.
And there's no stigma. We don't even know which ones are who.
And you kind of can tell some of us are a little more chubby.
Yeah, well, that there is that. But hey, I didn't say that.
I did, though.
So how's it going? Is it going well? It sounds like it.
It's actually, we're getting more and more folks showing up from all, like Monica says, all walks of life, really. And one of the things that I think has really triggered the desire for people to be with us is they are so alone during this COVID pandemic.
Yes, that is true.
So it's critical, I think, for people's mental health. I had a couple that just came from our church that have been locked up this whole time. They both have health issues. And I said, come on out. We can keep you safe and we can keep you warm and we can feed you and you can enjoy friends.
So what you're experiencing on the street is very positive. People are coming and people are telling you things. And I guess there's more people helping you. Been there for a couple of visits, just for the food, of course.
Not working too hard, though, you weren't.
I know. I just sit there and talk. Hey, that's
which is exactly what we love that, right?
Oh.
We want people to have conversations and walk away fulfilled.
Yes.
And you know, Steve, your show was a big benefit to us. We had two listeners in particular that out of the blue reached out to us and gave us donations. And the first was Askew's. David Askew just thought that this was an amazing program that we're doing. He agrees with the principles and the good food for our local citizens. And then Dr. Richard Curry and his wife stepped up to the table and thought that was definitely something that they value and saw a lot of benefit in. So we're very thankful for that, because those gift cards help us to buy product. We go through a lot of, there's a lot of food, there's a lot of common area expenses because of the paper plates, and you see everything's being done safely. We have to have individual servings and the gloves, and we're just trying to be safe but still doing a really good job of being effective in how the nutrition's being provided.
Thank you for that detail. Those are things that I wouldn't necessarily remember to think about. And it sounds, you know, I mean, I've heard a lot about Salmon Arm. I've only been here about 15, 16 years, but this little town has quite a heart. And they proved it again during the coldest night of the year I think they raised a huge amount of money. They were 150-something percent of their target. Their target was $40,000. They beat Kamloops and Kelowna, apparently. Yeah. So it does have a big heart. I think there's some individuals that they know who they are that did a lot of work to make it happen. And in this case, we're not going to throw, as they say in French, throw flowers at you, but I would like to congratulate you. So what more can we do? What more can people do for food? And before we even get to that, I want some specifics. I know that you got a grant also from the co-op for propane.
Mm-hmm. That was huge because our propane costs during the winter were nuts. We had four tanks, 20-pound tanks going literally every lunch, and that's four lunches, that's 16 lunches a month. So having co-op on board with us has been excellent. And during the month of February, we had Fuel Up February, and anybody who went to get fuel and put it towards the Food Action Group's number, which is 101001. I'm so proud I remember that.
Good.
Next year, Food with Friends will be a recipient of some of those monies. So the co-op has been amazing, but our whole community has.
Yes, it's like, well, of course, it's like synergy. It's, you know, these things come out of nowhere and people want to help. I think it, in many cases, it's just, it's knowing that many of them don't know. There's too many people out there that do not listen to CKVS, Voice of the Shuswap, 93.7 FM. But they're getting more and more.
They are, Steve. And I think, too, what's happening is people want to help to different degrees. And Salmon Arm, your capabilities are one person can do one thing and the other can't. And what we're seeing is even people from all walks of life that can't come out and maybe do food service because they have compromised health. But, geez, can I bake for you? Can I do your soup? Mm-hmm. And that really says a lot about the heart of that person. And we're so grateful to that. And then we've had people that we went to school with show up and they've heard about the program and they know what we're doing. And they're helping us to set up those tents and fire rings. And, you know, many hands just make it a real quick, easy job. We're in, we're out. We clean up well. It's just a really nice effort. The people that even come for lunch have helped us. They help set up, take down, wipe down the tables and chairs.
I did, but of course Chrissy doesn't think it's enough, but I'll keep trying.
I still love you, Steve.
Oh, thank you,
no,
Chrissy.
We value all our volunteers.
I know.
And I think everybody feels loved, especially when they get to eat. So
yeah, each one does what they can, and sure. That's what you were alluding to, Monica. And the more people hear about it, either through our radio station or secondhand word of mouth, the people out in Salmon Arm. Yeah. So one of the things I think is really powerful is when you tell a personal story, not your personal story, but a story, a quick little story about an individual who goes there. Of course, they're anonymous, but where you think there's been a real impact. Can you think of one? We'll start with Monica. And can you think of somebody that comes there that really this for this person, this is important?
We have a number of them, and so, of course, won't name them. But when we see how they at first would approach us, Chris mentioned this before, and they would just take their lunch and go sit off to the side. And now they're arriving early, this one fellow in particular, helping to set up till what he can. He is cold. We know that. As soon as the fire started, he likes to sit down and warm up his feet, quite often dry out his socks. So we have clean socks to provide and then to eat. And he is socializing. And it doesn't matter if they sit down beside him, whoever it is, he talks, he's sharing. And now he has reached out and he has indicated to us that he would really like help. Doesn't know how to go about it, but we don't consider ourselves the one to have all the answers. We're just a bridge. So if one of us can find an answer and I can make a call to the housing support gal or to the ministry or something to connect people, that's what we'll do because I have lots of resources in the work I do. Even getting them a doctor's appointment or something that gets them to that next bridge on their way to wellness.
Fascinating. You know, when I think about the downtown east side in Vancouver and the attempt to reduce harm reduction, they call it. And this is in effect, in some respects, it's not precisely because they're talking about drugs and you guys aren't specifically involved. You're not involved with drugs. But it is harm reduction in many respects. What you're doing is a type of harm reduction because otherwise I think it could be a lot worse. Chrissy, you wanted to add to that, I'm sure.
I was just thinking, like on Friday, a really neat moment happened where a gal that we hadn't seen for a while came. And whenever you see people not come or, you know, unless you're in where we're at, you don't really get how traumatic it can be, even when you hear sirens going. When you don't see somebody for a while, you worry about them. And here this gal shows up. And in the meantime that we haven't seen her, has managed to overcome a significant addiction. She's still going to struggle and slip and slide. But she has our numbers. She can phone us anytime. And just if you need us, phone this number. I'll talk to you. You can talk to anyone here and we will be with you through this. And there's no shame involved with that, right? Yeah. So that was just a beautiful grace note for me on Friday.
It makes you smile, and it really is encouraging that what you're doing is so valuable. And, you know, when I hear stories like that, I think those are the things that touch us. And people that hear that want to help. I think human beings, and you, of course, you've all said this, really, deep down, intrinsically, we are compassionate. We want to help. Many times we don't know how, but you've just alluded to some of them. You do what you can. So time passes quickly, and I have two other guests, but I want to give you an opportunity to provide a little message to those who are listening about this program and about the homeless. I'm going to start with you, Chrissy. When we talked a while ago, you had a message for me, and you think something's happening, and maybe all of us should give our head a really good shake. Go ahead.
Well, I think the first thing is come on out. I don't think you get how special these folks are until you come on out and we're sitting around a fire together and we spare no expense, because I feel like I serve a king and he's got a palate that's just wonderfully broad. All the people that we care for.
That's good. I'm going to interrupt because I want to know where it is, because again, we're assuming everybody knows where, but it's at the Crossroads Church parking lot, just down below it. So Crossroads is right on Shuswap. It's the first church past the Husky Station on your right, and it's down below there. Any other explanation you'd give for where exactly it is?
Or when you're at No Frills, look across the field and you'll see the back parking lot.
That's right. And that's where there's a C-can there, a little one. I'm sorry, Chrissy. But also, you're normally Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday at noon, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, carry on. I cut you off.
That's okay. I lost track of that one, Steve. But I just want to add, too, now here at First Community, First United Church on Wednesday between 12 and 1, they now have food available for takeout for people. So we're literally feeding meals now 5 days a week. There's always room for more, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you talked about the community and the invitation. The invitation to come and be, even just come for lunch, because it helps to reduce stigma. And I think a lot of people have misconceptions. And yes, some of the people that you meet will be addicted, but some are just vulnerable seniors. Some of them have compromised health. Some of them have lost their loved one. It's a whole bunch of different people. And when you sit amongst, it really will help to change your mindset, because we shun that which we don't understand. And when you come and see, you realize that yeah, they're struggling, but they're someone's kid. They're someone's brother, someone's sister.
Well, thank you both for coming in again, and thank you for what you do. And I know that this community is benefiting greatly from your activities. And to the extent possible, I'm going to try and attend more often because I like the soup. This fourth broadcast in the series is about greenhouses. And greenhouses in the snow, though. So that ought to perk your interest. You ought to be really wondering about that one. But before I go, I want to acknowledge another important member of the Food Action Society, and that's Shelley Corbin. She's also a producer on both Food Conversations and More Food for Thought. Thank you, Shelley. We have an important and quite timely discussion for you today. The COVID crisis obviously has caused much hardship and harm to many. More and more people realize the fragile nature of our access to food security, and food sovereignty, particularly during the winter months. And that's where these greenhouses come in the snow. We need fresh produce or groceries. Most of it's brought in by truck now. And as the bird dog says, if you got it, a big truck brought it. Many families want to grow their own fresh fruit and veggies. They want to learn how to cook and preserve produce. And that's what these food conversations are all about. At least we're trying. Along with More Food for Thought, our objectives are to inform, educate, entertain, and especially raise awareness of many of the issues around food and food security. And as I said just a few moments ago, the driving force for these programs is the Food Action Society, the Shuswap Food Action Society. And they are really very active. And even with the boundless energy and skill of their executive members, they need your help. So why don't you just write down this contact information just before I get to my guests? I want you to write this contact information down. If you want to contact CKVS, Voice of the Shuswap, to leave a message for Chrissy or Monica or Warren Bell or me, Steve Corey, you can call us at 250-463-5026. And you probably have to leave a message because we're all volunteers and we do have some part-time help. But leave a message and she'll get back to you. Or you can email info@voiceoftheshuswap.ca. For Shuswap Food, you can go to their website, shuswapfood.ca, or send an email to info@shuswapfood.ca. The private phone numbers of our volunteers are not made public. We are all volunteers at CKVS and Shuswap Food, and we welcome your input. However modest, join us. So, let's get to our guests. The first contact I got was from an email from a lady named Kate Spielman. And she told me about my first guest is Carissa Jones of Shuswap Anchor Boy and Cable Service. You can get it on the website is Shuswap Anchor. So I didn't mention right at the beginning. Yes, I did. I mentioned our sponsor. But Carissa, I just want please for you to tell me where you live now and how long you've been there, and then we'll talk a little bit about where you came from.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for having me on the show, first of all. And my husband and I are originally from BC, moved to Grand Prairie for about 10 years, and then we came back to the Shuswap area, and we're currently living up in Glen Eden. We've been here for about 3 years now.
So you're originally from here, and then you went to Grand Prairie, and then you came back.
That's right.
Right. So, and now you have a little company called shuswapanchor.ca, and it has another name, Mountain Marine, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So did she tell you how she found you?
Well, Kate, actually, we were connected through another business coach of ours that we were working with through Mountain Marine. And we had been discussing about, we have some property up in Glen Eden and where we store our boat, as well as we have a variety of other things going on there. And we wanted to put in a greenhouse. And as we discussed that, we were talking with our business coach who had connections to greenhouses in the snow. And he'd mentioned about these fabulous greenhouses. And from there, we were introduced to Kate, who does strawberries. So she does quite a variety. She does vertical growing with strawberries. She grows about an acre's worth of strawberries in 4,000 square feet.
Wow.
So some really innovative, creative people. She's actually just up the road, just up the mountain, I'd say, to us. So that was somebody that we got put in contact with to kind of really test the concept of what we're looking to dive into with greenhouses in the snow.
Yeah, it sounds like the, what do they call that? The jungle, word of mouth. They call it the jungle telegraph or something. That sounds really interesting. Good. I didn't know that Kate grew strawberries, and I didn't know that she, in 4,000 square feet, she can grow an acre's worth. That sounds like SPIN, and I can't remember exactly an acronym for intensive agriculture. But I understand now how you met Kate, and she put you in touch with Dale, right?
It was our business coach actually put us in touch with. He had mentioned actually a year ago about the greenhouses, but we were working on some other projects. And it was just kind of funny how it lined up because we were looking into greenhouses again. And we actually were connected. It was kind of a wild goose chase where I had called a variety of different places. And it ended up leading me to Dale.
Yeah, you know, and for a big guy, he's kind of hard to find sometimes, it looks like. But boy, when you find him, it's interesting. So you discovered this greenhouse in the snow. And so my next question is, you decided to go into market gardening of some sort, or you have a garden at home, but you want to do some market gardening?
So with the discussion of these really incredible and innovative greenhouses, there became this apparent need for an all-year-round availability to fresh produce in the Shuswap specifically. So we thought creating something like this and utilizing the space that we have, the business knowledge that we have, the passion, our values as a family, growing that fresh produce all year round, gave us the availability to potentially create this business concept that enabled us to provide that to our community. So we are looking to have greenhouses installed on our property and create that business plan, the business concept in which we are going to be leasing that space out. So we make it available to all of the people within the Shuswap, creating that food security, enabling the food sovereignty, and just being able to give people the opportunity to have produce all year round, fresh garden produce all year round, and get your hands in the dirt when you want to get them in there.
I'm sure it's going to catch on because there's a lot of people talking about this, especially during the winter. So that's why one of the reasons why we've got Dale in here, Dale Klegas, who is my next guest. I'm going to get back to you, Carissa, but let's go to our the manager, this Dale Klegas. Dale, welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
I have to, full disclosure here, when I contacted Dale, he reminded me that he had worked for Serenity Now Landscapes, a little plug for that company, way back in 2007, 2008. And I was a partner with my son, Nicholas, in Serenity Now Landscapes. So there's a connection here, but full disclosure, Nick is now sole proprietor, so there's no real conflict of interest. Dale, let's talk a little bit about, you're the owner manager of sales for Greenhouse. Tell me a little bit about Greenhouse in the Snow.
Yeah, so Greenhouse in the Snow, it's a concept that was actually thought of and designed by Russ Finch, a fellow down in Nebraska. He has been working on it for over 35 years. He's had his greenhouse in production for about 30 years. They're in his own zone 5A, which is one zone colder than here in the Shuswap. And they produce year-round in their greenhouse all sorts of fruits and vegetables.
That's interesting. So we're what zone are we in here?
We're a 6A.
We're a 6A.
Yeah.
So that's warmer.
Yes.
And he's in a 5A in Nebraska. Yeah, the Great Plains, I guess. The cold comes roaring down there.
Yeah, they have an ugly winter. It's cold and windy, and yeah, they can grow all sorts of produce in these greenhouses.
And for you, the listener out there, go right away to the website if you have a moment and you're sitting on your next to your computer, and go to greenhouseinthesnow, all one word, .ca, correct?
Yeah, that will get you there.
Oh, give me another one.
It's greenhouseinthesnowcanada.ca.
Green, and I've got it written down, so mea culpa. greenhouseinthesnowcanada.ca. Go there and have a look at it because it's rather interesting. You got this greenhouse and there's lots of snow around.
Yes, that's right.
So tell me real quickly, we're going to get into more details, but how does this, what's the principle here? I mean, you're going to use a lot of energy to keep this thing warm?
So the concept is it's a Wallace Pini style greenhouse, which means it was built into the ground. It's dug in 4 feet, and you have it's also heated with some geothermal geo-air heating system and solar passive. So it's dug into the ground, which helps hold the winter heat or heat in the winter, and the energy used to heat it with the geo-air is very little. It comes out at our current rates right now of hydro. It's about $1.67 a day that it would cost to run for the heating system.
So I'd figure that's about 30 and another half, 40, about $50 a month or something around there.
Yeah, yeah, and that's to grow your produce year round.
Yeah, and that would be 100-footer.
Yes,
1,700 square feet. Okay, we're going to also, though, but for those who are not familiar, let's talk about geothermal, the principle of geothermal. And you know, the greenhouse itself is dug 4 feet down into the ground. But now what about these trenches? Tell me a little bit about that.
So yeah, it's considered a low-grade geothermal. It's an air system. So there's fans that push air down through the soil, and it picks up, when it's cold air in the greenhouse, it picks up a few degrees of soil temperature, and the air comes out warmer. And vice versa, in the summer, these systems also work to help cool the greenhouse. It pushes the hot air down, it runs it through the earth, and back up into the greenhouse at a cooler temperature. So it works both ways.
Works both ways, heating and cooling. You go about 8 feet down. What's the temperature? Fairly stable down there all the time. What's the temperature down there?
Yeah, 10.5 degrees Celsius or 51, 52 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, so I remember Russ Finch saying, yeah, and you can see outside it's cold. Thermometer says, what, 15 below or something. He's talking Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit, yeah.
But for us, 20 below Celsius or say 15, and he can still maintain that 52 degrees Fahrenheit in his greenhouse in the middle of winter when it's really cold outside.
That's right.
That's fascinating, especially if he doesn't really have any other. He did say, I think, what, three times in 30 years he had to use a little bit of extra heat.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, but that was getting down to minus 25, minus 30 Celsius for a week that they had to add extra heat.
That's what's so fascinating about this, because there's been a lot of talk about geothermal. And I happen to know somebody who has geothermal heating system for his house. It cost him a lot of money. He put a lot of, but it's apparently very, very efficient. So now we have this geothermal, and now let's talk. Now we're going to have to try and describe what this greenhouse looks like. So the structure, there's some important details here that we have to describe. First of all, what does it look like? It's kind of low, isn't it? It's low.
Yeah, it sticks up about 8 feet. Above grade.
Yeah. So, and it sort of slants down to the back, but the front facing south, what's that wall look like?
Yeah, so that's all glazed, the front wall. It's curved, and it's twin wall polycarbonate that we put on that, on the south facing wall. The east, west, and north walls are all insulated, so you don't lose any heat out of them, and you don't need the light that comes in those walls.
And I was just talking a few moments ago to Carissa Jones, who is also a guest today, and she's interested in maybe buying one or two of these. And she is we can thank her for getting us in touch with Dale Klegis, Greenhouse in the Snow. And I got to tell you, I have been trying to find, I was on the web, I didn't have the right, I guess, input. But when Carissa came along, actually, when Kate sent me an email putting me in touch with Carissa, I was over the moon, because now, okay, things started to come together quite rapidly. You were talking about, Dale, you were talking about polycarbonate, which is, let's describe that for a moment. They're sheets, I understand. How thick are they about?
Yeah, they're about 8 mil.
Eight mil?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're a twin wall product.
Yeah.
So there's layer on the outside, layer on the inside, and then, yeah, sort of like cardboard.
Yeah, okay.
But it's
how thick is it? What's the thickness total between the two layers?
So 8 millimeters.
Oh, eight millimeters.
Yeah, that's the thickness, yeah.
That's all?
Yeah.
And you put that on, and that becomes your insulation?
Yeah, it's got a slight R value.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And the sun gets through, of course. Mm-hmm. Okay, the structure itself is steel, I understand.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and what we're looking, try and describe it now. It's round. It's not square or, you know, vertical walls like you'd see in a classic conventional greenhouse.
Yeah, that's right. It's got, I guess, a modern look to it.
Ah.
Yeah.
With that south-facing wall being also passive solar, we call it.
Correct, yeah.
So you're going to get some heat when the sun shines.
That's for sure. Even in the winter when it's minus 20, it can be 30 degrees in there on a sunny day. Like, it's going to heat up pretty good.
Yeah.
And you'll actually have to end up using some of the cooling capacity in the winter as well.
That's interesting. Putting on the air conditioning in the winter. But again, it's just recirculating that air. You don't have to really have any kind of a cooling unit. You just have to get that air moving.
Yeah, that's right. It's still just ground temperature that it's pulling in.
Carissa, I want to ask you, when you're germinating your seeds, what temperature do you generally have in the ambient temperature where the seeds are being germinated? Do you germinate your own stuff?
I typically...
you know what? This might be a better question for you, Dale. I know honestly, I don't actually measure it. I don't. I just have them in a container where it's warm and in front of the sunlight. And I know there's some condensation in there. So I'd guess it'd be anywhere from 25 to 30.
Yeah, it has to be higher, I believe. But I'm going to let Dale, who's probably more of an expert than me, he's looking doubtful. But Dale, what do you think? What to germinate seeds? Again, it depends on the seeds. Like any kind of kale or broccoli or those things will germinate just without even any help.
Yeah, they germinate at low temperatures. Others, everything needs some humidity. That's
the humidity, that's and some need a higher temperature. I used to use about 25 to get them to germinate. But once they've germinated, this is what I found interesting about listening to Russ. That 52 degrees is just fine.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they'll handle even down to close to freezing.
Yeah.
Most things will. They just won't handle that actual frost.
No. 52 degrees Fahrenheit, again, I got to repeat that. That's about 10.5 degrees Celsius. We should be talking Celsius. Right. Somebody's going to tap me on the knuckles here. So you've described, and I think you talked about the structure being steel. By the way, we didn't even get into that. I'm sorry. You have a shop in Vernon.
In Vernon.
Yes. Yeah. And what do you do in your shop?
So we bring this steel in and we fabricate it there, bend the pieces and get them welded up by a certified welder. And then we ship it out in crates and supply across Canada.
Across Canada. Tell me about that. You have the license for Canada?
Yeah, we're licensed for these greenhouses within Canada. And we've sent them out as far as Ontario so far. We've got a few out there and Alberta.
You BC. Told me on the phone, how many have you sent out so far?
Seven. We just started up in... we just shipped the first one in September last year.
That's quite... But that's remarkable. They're brand new. Nobody knows about them yet. But the people that get them, are you getting any feedback?
They haven't all got them constructed yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, winter beat them.
Yeah, to the punch. Yeah, that happens. Yeah, because I wanted to try and find some cost benefit analysis, and we talked about this off air, and it's not there yet. We might get something from Russ. I remember him talking about it, but he's more of he calls himself an amateur. It's hard to, he's growing citrus, he's growing lemons and oranges. In Nebraska, the people from Florida are looking askance at Russ and saying, "You're going to try to be competition." You were going to say, "Okay, the metal you fabricate it yourself, and then you buy the sheets,
polycarbonate,
a polycarbonate."
Yeah, we bring that.
You're going to have to describe for me polycarbonate because I'm always thinking polyethylene, and which is what you might put on what my greenhouse is made of. I got a little 8x10. And it'll last, polyethylene, I think, will last, what, 3-4 years?
Yeah, not very long.
Not very long.
So another name for it is Lexan.
Lexan.
Which people may be familiar with.
How do you spell that? Lexan?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
And it's basically, if it's in a solid sheet thick enough, that's what they use for bulletproof glass.
Oh.
It's a very, very, very tough product.
Okay, it's tough. Yeah. And
it'll handle hail. Not that we get a lot of hail around here, but there is some greenhouses down in the U.S. that have been hit with softball-sized hail twice in one day. And it stretches it, but it doesn't go through.
Wow. Car windshields will break with a golf ball.
Most things do.
Yeah, and polycarbonate won't. That's very interesting. And, okay, what about durability? How long will it last?
It's got about a 20-year lifespan or more. It's UV protected.
Oh,
yeah.
So that gets to the question of, cost benefit. We're going to get into the cost of these things in a moment. But I completely skipped over a lot of your background. I'm looking at some of my notes here about landscape working and landscape gardening at the coast.
Right.
So you have a background in this area of gardening, and you were an arborist, I understand.
Yes.
Yeah,
I've been in the horticulture industry now for, it's well over 20 years in many aspects of it.
So you've seen some different aspects.
And I've been looking to bring something to market for many years and find something that would really change change people's ability to grow or garden. And when I came across this, this is something that really, really changes the game.
Yeah, I think somewhere in my notes, somebody said you like to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
And through your experiences, you've come to believe that we can actually grow things practically all year round.
Yeah.
And with this greenhouse, of course, you need something that's going to protect and allow them to grow. And you spent some time in Prince George.
I did, yeah. I spent a few years up there. That was going to school for forestry. And then that's shortly after that, I got more into the gardening end of things. There wasn't a lot of forestry jobs back in the early 2000s. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. But more recently, you've been searching for ways to grow food, certainly more efficiently in the winter. Is this
yes.
particularly in the winter? What drew you back to the Shuswap?
Yeah, we actually moved here 14 years ago. We're in Armstrong, North Okanagan, Shuswap area. Absolutely love it here.
Yeah, a lot of people.
It's home.
Yeah, there's a few things about it that are. What are some of the things that you love about it? Tell me.
Just there's the lakes, the community itself too is it's very community orientated. The whole valley here is the lakes in the summer, the ski hills, the mountains in the winter. It's got all four seasons, and it's an awesome place to raise a family.
So you have children?
Yeah, two.
Oh, congratulations. So you felt that the industry was sort of stuck a little bit in the conventional ways of doing things. And how did you find Greenhouse in the Snow?
I came across Russ's YouTube video. He'd done an interview with Kirsten Dirksen, who's got quite a following on YouTube. And she goes and documents different aspects of like greenhouses, off-grid living, different types of structures, and anything unique. So she had interviewed Russ, and he's gathered a lot of interest off that video. So I had come across that, and I contacted them right away to inquire about getting one, and they had mentioned to me that they were looking for somebody in Canada. So it was shortly after that. It was about 3 weeks, and I tried to get down there to see them.
Yeah. Tell me a little story about trying to get down there. I heard it was kind of interesting.
Well, it was tough. It was early last year, and the border had closed, but it was open for business. But I tried to drive across with a letter of invite for a business meeting, and they hummed and hawed for about an hour, and then eventually turned me back around. But a few weeks later, I flew down there, and spent about a week with Russ and Alan.
Just fly over top of the border.
That's right.
So you met with him?
Yeah. I went and toured Russ's greenhouse, and it was absolutely amazing walking into it in early May. It was just oranges, lemons, flowers. There was grapes starting to blossom. You had fig trees.
So you talked about citrus, but what other kinds of things are in there? Is it from the video, tell me, please, what other things?
Yeah, he's got a little bit of everything. He's probably got about 300-500 varieties of different things. So it's even hard to find anything. It's a real jungle in his greenhouse. He's had it for 30 years.
Cornucopia, I think, is one thing that comes to mind. Yeah. It's got lots of variety. I'm not sure if he mentioned orchids.
Yes, orchids do very well in there.
Yeah, he grows
orchids. Cymbidium orchids, they survive well and flower year round, and he's got a pile of different roses in there, canna lilies, camellias. There's a multitude of flowers and a lot of fruit,
all growing in the middle of winter. So I think one thing we did talk about, and I know I'm jumping around, but in the middle of our winter, there is one thing that's lacking, and that's light.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. You need about
The farther north you get, the less light you have.
So what do? You have to provide some sort of artificial light.
Yeah. Some LED grow lights will be
sufficient.
Yeah,
which are pretty cheap to operate.
Yeah, they're every year they're getting cheaper.
Yeah, and they're a little more expensive to buy, but that's really interesting. So now you don't have one right now in where people can go and see it.
No, we're working on that, and we'll have a demonstration one up here in a couple months.
Let's go back to Carissa Jones, my other guest, and ask her. I wonder if she has a timeline. Do you have a timeline when you want to, because you told me you wanted to get one or maybe more, Carissa?
Ideally, we want to have our whole backyard full of them. I think it's a phenomenal idea. It's fantastic. What we'd like to start off with would be 100 feet. And then we would have another one, I think it was 68 that we were looking at. And that would enable us to have a 68 foot one personally, that we can test different varieties of vegetables, different varieties of fruit, see what works, see what doesn't, see what can grow all year round, and just kind of give us a better idea of what that looks like. And then another one to have more of a commercial use.
Okay. Yeah. So we got to go. You want to build two then. Now, obviously, I'm not going to ask you about your budget, et cetera. That's your business. You're going to develop another business from the one that you, the one I saw on the internet, on the website is Shuswap Boy and Cable. Yes?
So oh, Shuswap
Anchor.
That's right. Yes.
Sorry. Shuswap Anchor Boy and Cable. So have you got a name for your new company?
We haven't yet. We've got a few things brewing, a few things that we're looking at. So we'll be putting it out there, and I'll let you know when we do.
Okay. Please, yeah, give us a call. And, you know, we could get somebody back on the air, much as I did this morning with Chrissy and Monica, to have a little follow-up. Here's what's happening. Here's some more information for you. But I want to get back to Dale, because now I want to get into the money. What's it going to cost me? So let's... What's the smallest size?
So the smallest size is about 36 feet, and all the models are 17 feet wide.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. They're all 17 feet wide and 36 feet for length, and then anywhere building onto that in 4-foot increments.
4-foot increments. Okay. So what are we going to, you know, I know that polycarbonate isn't cheap, and neither steel, that steel structure, and of course, then you got to dig those trenches. So let's talk... For that 36 footer, about what would that cost here in the Shuswap?
So the kit itself is $8,100 for the 36 foot. And then you'll have additional materials that you source locally from your hardware store. The additional materials aren't something we're going to ship far and wide because they're available locally. So that would be about an additional probably $8,000 on top of that to finish your kit off.
Okay, so we're looking at, for that 36-footer, about $16,100, plus we haven't talked about the cost of digging those trenches.
Right, that would, you could probably, on that smaller one, it would be included in that $8,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So for about $16,000, you could build one of these 36 feet long, I haven't figured it out by 17, how many square feet is that? I don't have my calculator. I figure that's about a third of 1,700. So you're looking at about 600 square feet.
Yeah, roughly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that and in 600 square feet, as we know, we just heard from Carissa telling us about Kate Spielman's strawberries that she can grow an acre's worth of normal growing strawberries. She can produce that amount in 4,000 square feet of intensive agriculture. Is that in a greenhouse, Carissa?
I haven't seen her setup, but I do believe that she has a... You know what? I can't say. Okay. I can't say.
Well,
can't
no, say hey, sure. Listen, if anybody is interested, and I am, because I'm going to talk to Kate, I'll send her an email. But if you... I'm not going to give out anybody's phone number. I don't have it, first of all, in front of me, but call or get in touch with the Shuswap Food Action Society. Food Action Society, because go to their website. Kate is a member, and you know they have planned, I think, again this year, a farm tour, and that would be one place I'd like to go and see. Because when you tell me that, you know, I mean, I don't think we clearly understand how capable we are of producing all the food we need in this area right through the winter, right, Dale?
Well, that's right. Large majority of fruits, nuts, and berries, 90% are imported into Canada. So we can do a whole lot better than that and supply our local areas with a whole lot more fruit and veggies. And
yeah, we can, okay, just by building, if we had to build some of these. So Obviously, that still sounds like a fair bit of money, like $16,000 for a 36-foot. I don't know what a conventional greenhouse would cost. I would imagine it's substantially less.
It's actually in the same ballpark, a conventional greenhouse with a propane heater or natural gas heater is very comparable cost per square foot, yeah.
No,
yeah,
kidding.
Cost per square foot.
Cost per
you
square
get foot. Your small little 6x8 backyard greenhouse is very cheap, but
yeah, mine's an 8x10, and it wasn't very expensive. But that you can't compare it because its lifespan or its a useful lifespan isn't very long. 3-4 years. I've got 3 years out of it if I get through this season. But anyway, that's another story. But that's interesting for a conventional, hardy, well-built, let's say, aluminum frame greenhouse. It's going to cost about the same amount per square foot.
Yep. Well, that's very similar. And then you have, if you're going to use that year-round, you have a lot higher heating costs because they're above ground. They don't have the heat-holding capacity, and you're burning a whole lot of fossil fuels to heat that.
So that's where you win hands down. Is this thing, the operating costs, they're not negligible, but they're pretty low.
Yeah, they're much lower.
They're much lower because you're just using a circulating fan, basically, for energy. You might probably not need any kind of heat source, other heat source.
I don't expect we will here, but
not here.
It's good to have some kind of backup heat.
Have a backup just in case. And yeah, that's fascinating. So really where you win, excuse me, is on the operating costs.
Yeah, it's the long-term gain from it.
Yeah. I can't believe how quickly the time goes because I'm having a discussion here. I'm really interested. But so we did talk about the cost. So per linear foot, well, we went from $16,000 for a 36-foot. That means, say, let's talk about 100 feet. That's a big one. 100 feet long, 17 feet wide. That's 1,700 square feet. How much is that going to cost?
That one is $20,000.
$20,000 for that plus... Now, that doesn't include installation. That's the kit.
That's the kit, yeah.
The kit is $20,000 for 1,700 square feet. Now you're going to have to add the digging, the backhoe and the trenching, and the footprint has to be down 4 feet.
That's right.
That's a bit of digging. That's like digging a pretty big...
It takes a couple days, yeah.
Yeah. And you don't want to do it by hand.
No.
My mother warned me.
A lot of wheelbarrows.
Yeah, lots of wheelbarrows. Okay, so how much would that cost, the other part of the trenching, et cetera, about?
Yeah, so that's gonna run probably between 12 and 14.
So let's use the top end, $14,000. So for $34,000... you could have installed with the kit a 100 foot, that's 1,700 square feet greenhouse that'll operate all year round.
That's correct, yeah. And you can grow quite a bit in there.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is that one of the things I hope to do a show on, maybe, I don't know, is I have the book at home, The Market Gardener, I think it's called. It's a guy, and I mean, the Quebecers have got all kinds of things going on down there because they have a very harsh climate also. Actually, I think they're in a harsher climate than ours. And this guy in Quebec, I can't remember his name right now. It doesn't matter. Market Gardener, you can get the book. He, on I think it was 2 acres, could grow at the time, and that's probably 10 years ago now when he wrote the book, about $100,000 worth of produce. And that's not using a greenhouse. That's during the growing season. Wow. Intensive agriculture. So when you talk to me about a greenhouse, I admit that's only 1,700 square feet and an acre is 45,000 square feet. But in a greenhouse, you don't have to worry about pests, do you?
Well, they'll come in there too, but you can deal with them organically quite easily and through soil health.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So pests are not as much of a problem as they would be outside. Water, of course, you always have to have a water source. That's a given. What are some of the other possible expenses that could unforeseen?
Yeah, the lights, that's going to be an expense as well up here, but you only have to supplement the light. So we get down to a day, about 8 hour a day at our shortest time. So you supplement maybe 4 hours of light.
Oh, okay.
Into the greenhouse. Give most plants like 12 hours of light.
Yes. Somewhere I saw that. Yeah. Right now, at this time in March, we're getting very close to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the equinox is coming up, what, on the 21st, which is 12 and 12. 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours, of course, come Saturday, they're going to screw everything up and give us daylight saving time and throw it all off. I don't even know what that does to the... What that does to the amount of, I don't think it affects the amount of light that the plants get. They don't care about
the
daylight.
No, the plants don't mind the time.
Yeah, they just disregard it. Carissa, before we're running out of time, it's mm-hmm. nearly, but I want to give you the last word. Tell me a little bit about your market gardening and buying a couple of these. I'm kind of excited. Are you excited about it?
We're super excited. Yeah, it's something that is innovative. We absolutely love working with Dale and Chelsea. They're informative. We're able to get a lot of great ideas and bounce some things off of each other. And we're really excited to work with a lot more people that are engaged in soil health, that we're able to connect with as far as pest management. Things like Andrea Gunner, you know, we're hoping to connect with her and the as a agricultural economist, is it?
I think so, yeah. Yes. I'm not...
So not only are we excited about connecting with all of these people, but again, providing that space for growing all year round for our community and just giving people that option to have good quality, fresh produce in the winter and throughout the year.
Yeah, that sounds exciting to me too. Thank you very much for coming in, Carissa Jones and Dale Klegas. And I hope to do a follow-up and see how you're doing, especially if there's something new that comes up, Dale.
For sure. Yeah, no, it's been great to be here, Steve.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming in.